The 1980s were good to Michael J. Fox. The actor shot to fame with roles in the sitcom Family Ties and the Back to the Future films.
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
But in 1991, at the age of 29, Fox was diagnosed with early-onset Parkinson's disease. In 2000, he founded the Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson's Research. The organization has raised $1 billion to find a cure. Through it all, Fox found a way to maintain his signature optimism. Until 2018, when his sunny disposition took a significant hit, Fox underwent spinal surgery, and then a serious fall that forced him to confront his mortality. He writes about that year in his new book, No Time Like the Future, which is out this week. And Michael J. Fox joins me now. Welcome.
A pleasure to be here.
And tell me about that fall.
Well, I had had an eventful year up to that point. I was dealing with my 30th year with Parkinson's. So that kind of I had a handle on. Then I had a spinal tumor. And I had surgery on that. And it took me a while to learn how to walk again. And I barely learned to walk again when I, of course, declared independence. And told everybody I could walk on my own and I could be alone. And so the first time I was alone in the apartment, I got up, walked into the kitchen, slipped on the floor and shattered my arm. And of all the indignities, that was for some reason the cutting blow.
Yeah. So you, as you say, you were dealing not only with Parkinson's for many years, you had just gone through this incredibly dangerous surgery to remove a tumor from your spine. Just to spend a moment there for a minute. How serious was that spinal diagnosis?
It was pretty serious. It had been with me for quite a while, for a few years, but it had been kind of benign and static and wasn't doing anything. And I kind of got, from the doctors, I got to just watch that and check on it every now and then. So one of the last times I checked on it, it had in fact grown quite considerably and was actually on the spinal cord itself, which then made it something that most surgeons didn't want to touch because they can't in any way touch the spinal cord. So how do you remove something from the spinal cord when you can't touch it? But a doctor at Johns Hopkins, Dr. Theodore, went through it with me and discussed the risks. And the risks of not doing it were that I would be paralyzed by now. By the time we speak, from when it was put to me that way, I would be paralyzed by now.
Yeah, and there you are, lying on the floor in your apartment in New York City, your arm shattered. You'd gone through all of these challenges and gotten through them for the most part, right? So where do you think the darkness came from? Why did you so desperately lose that optimism that you become known for?
Just for some reason, it was almost instantaneous. This was the last lemon that I was no longer going to make lemonade. I just said, this is unbelievable. And I was angry at myself for taking for granted the attention and the care that everyone put into my health and my life and, you know, my family that had been asking me to be careful. And I said, don't, I'm being careful. And then I carelessly, because I was walking too fast and I was too kind of full of pride at my achievements to understand the risk I was taking and that it put all the work the doctors had done at risk and then put all the time and attention that the physical therapist had put into me at risk. And I just thought, I was angry at myself at that level. And then I further got angry, as I said, about this, how's I going to put a shine on this? What kind of catchy phrase that I have to lay on myself to get me past this? There was nothing. It was just like, and then I started to think with the Parkinson's community, had I offered up optimism as a panacea, had I, you know, kind of said, chin up, it'll be okay. And really, there are people that had on the misery index a lot higher needle than me lying on the floor with a broken arm and a bad back. And Parkinson's disease, there are people who have lost lives, homes, country, family, children. What about them? Who am I to tell them to be optimistic? I'm lying on the floor like a rag.
Oh, and I can see why you would be angry, but what about scared?
Yeah, I was scared too. Well, that what happened was when I came out of that period, that come off the floor and had my arm fixed and went through a period of reflection. And I examined all these things, fear, aging, gratitude, just all these things came through my mind. And as I made notes on them, for no reason other than just, I believe when you're going through something, it's worthwhile to take contemporaneous notes. And as I look back at these notes I made, I said, listen, I stitched together into the story of what happened and how I lost and regained my optimism and how my new optimism is kind of a little more informed and a little more realistic. You can be a realist and an optimist at the same time.
You reminded us, for those who need to be reminded, how precious a thing it is to walk. And I found the way that you described your relationship with wheelchairs to be very powerful. At one point in the book, you said that unless you know the person who's pushing you, it can be a very isolating experience. In fact, you compared yourself to a piece of luggage. And then you went on to say that if we could ever just look at each other in the eye, we would recognize our shared humanity. And I just want to thank you for that, because actually I had never thought of that before. And those are probably things I imagine that you took for granted at some stage in your life.
Absolutely. It's even when you're used to being, and I talk at great length in the book about what movement meant to me for my life, and how I was always moving, whether it was in my job as an actor, having to do stunts or having to do physical representations of what was happening. Or as an athlete, not a good one, but a persistent one. And so when I look at things like wheelchairs, it was a dual thing. One, to have been an able-bodied person my whole life, and then to be a position where I can't walk. And then the other thing about being in the chair is that, for me personally, I'm someone who is easily recognizable and everybody knows and tends to be familiar with, and even if they don't know me, and that's a great privilege of what I do. But when you're in a chair, you're just a piece of luggage. And if the guy pushing you, if you're in an airport or a hotel or something, he's just getting you from point A to point B and hoping he gets $5 for it. And so you're just this thing, and you get pushed out of the elevator, and you're facing the wall. You can't get anyone's attention other than verbally. You can't give a little nod because no one's looking. It's funny. Wheelchairs being as open as they are, they might as well have bubbles over them, smoke glass bubbles, because people can be quite anonymous in them.
Well, let's talk about your acting career, the thing that made it so that people recognize you on the street. You've gotten roles in recent years that didn't hide the fact that you had Parkinson's symptoms, but actually incorporated that into the role, such as Lewis Canning, who, of course, is the lawyer on the TV drama The Good Wife. Let's listen to a scene there.
I suffer from a condition, tardive dyskinesia, which is really, it's a funny word for a neurological disorder, and it makes me do this, and this, and if you just look at me long enough, you get used to it. So, feel free to look, and I won't mind.
In the book, you say that you're ready to accept that your acting career is over.
To a certain extent, I allow for the fact that something could surprise me or something could change. But the last couple times I acted, I took roles, and I happened to play lawyers again. And anyway, I had difficulty memorizing my lines. I had difficulty for some reason, and that had always been something that had been just a given with me. I'd look at a Family Ties script and for 5 minutes and I'd know the whole show. And I just always had that kind of photographic memory. So to get in a position where I didn't, and was struggling with the lines and was in the position of like Leo DiCaprio in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, just going off the set saying, what is the deal? But unlike him in that movie, who was berating himself and really angry, when I found myself in that position, I said, oh, okay, well, this isn't working, so maybe we'll find some other way to do it, or not do it at all.
Well, you also say you may be done with golf, another thing that you've loved. How is it letting these things go, or acknowledging that it might be time soon to let them go?
It's all about acceptance, and as I say in the book, gratitude. And the acceptance part of it is, whatever something is, if you accept it and just say, okay, that is what it is, I can deal with that. And by accepting it, it doesn't mean you can't endeavor to change it. But if you don't accept it for what it is, then it's going to be this amorphous blob that seeps through every cranny of your life, and you never feel settled, you never feel digested. So I accepted the fact that if I swing the golf club too hard, I fall down. And then it's not like, boo-hoo, I'm falling down. It's like, I'm falling down. And then, therefore, I don't put myself in that position again to fall down. But maybe one day I'll be treated in a way, or find some way to get so I don't fall down, and then I'll golf again, and I'll be grateful for it. It's just a matter of, it's not compartmentalizing, really. It's just taking inventory and seeing where that thing fits in the inventory of your life. And so the losses that I've had are more than compensated for by my family, by my friends, by the role I have in the Parkinson's community to affect change, to the relationships I have with people on the street, to how much I enjoy reading, how much I enjoy film, how much I enjoy writing. There's lots to fill your life.
I'm speaking with Michael J. Fox, whose new book is called No Time Like the Future, An Optimist Considers Mortality. And Michael, someone listening to this may have just been diagnosed with Parkinson's, and that could be very frightening for them, as you well know. In fact, you become an ambassador of sorts for folks with Parkinson's. What's your message to people who've just recently been diagnosed?
Well, I was talking to a man the other day who said that he had a nephew who was just diagnosed, and like me, was diagnosed at the age of 29. I was 29 when I was diagnosed. That was 29 years ago. So I said, for you being diagnosed at 29 means for sure, no doubt, bank on it, bet on it, write it down. There will be a cure in your lifetime.
And how much credit can the Fox Foundation take for that?
We'll take none. We'll just be happy it happened. We are the largest funder of Parkinson's research in the private sector. But it was never our mission. You know, our mission is just we have a thing when we first started. We talked about how to structure a foundation. And someone brought up endowments. So I said, endowment, like you get a pile of money you sit on? And I said, yeah. I said, we won't be doing that. The money will come in and it'll go out. And so that's a model we've operated on. And the other thing we've always said is purity of motive. Whatever you do, it's if your motive is pure, that you're just trying to get this work done as quickly as we can for people. And that's the way it's been. So yeah, optimism is a driver in almost everything I do, because there's no sense in doing something if you can't at least argue for a positive outcome.
Michael J. Fox, thank you so much. Be well.
Yeah, you too. Thanks.